Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts. Nintendo!
Nintendo Voice Chat for the week of June 2nd, 2016. I am your host, Jose Otero, and this is a very special episode. We've got a lot of people coming on the show today. If you look around the room and you're watching us on video, I am joined this week by Armando Torres.
Hey.
Callie Pleggy.
Hello.
And Miranda Sanchez.
Hello.
Because there was some new Pokemon information, but before we get into that, I want to quickly remind you that MVC is now on YouTube. You can go check that out by going to youtube.com/Nintendo Voice Chat. Do not look for us under NVC. You will not find us. I've said this before. Also, E3 is fast approaching, and IGN has a live show that you should make sure to tune in and check out. We will be carrying everything that Nintendo is doing on day one, which means there will be, and we'll get into this later in the show, but there'll be some Pokemon Sun and Moon stuff. There'll be new Zelda stuff. That's always fun. And once again, as I mentioned, this is a special format this week, so stick around, because after the break, we've got special guests. We've got all kinds of stuff going on. But let's kick it off with the reason we're all here. Pokemon Sun and Moon, new intel approaches. I mean, we're excited. Yep. We're still excited. Yes,
yes.
Everyone
yes,
here?
Super stoked.
So excited. Yeah.
Okay, excellent. So let's kick it off into sections. Let's start with the new legendary details, which Pokemon Company said today. So you got to help me with this pronunciation. Solgaleo?
I've been saying Solgaleo.
I've been saying Solgaleo just
Leo.
Because of the Galileo.
Leo, true.
Both sides. This is what I hate
I'll
about.
I'll take it.
Okay,
yeah.
So this is a psychic and steel type Pokemon. Yeah. Has a new ability. Both had new abilities,
right.
But his ability, its ability, it's not gendered yet. Full metal body, which prevents status lowering conditions from other Pokemon. It has a new attack called Sunsteel Strike, which looks like a spirit bomb meets a Kamehameha.
It's interesting. I want to back up a little bit because Full Metal Body is technically a new ability. I talk about this a lot I did a in-depth breakdown of the trailer that you can find on IGN. Yo. But the ability Full Metal Body is new, but it's not a new thing. It's it's basically Clear Body.
Yeah,
with
Clear
a name.
Body's existed for a while.
It's basically Clear Body, but with a name that goes with the steel typing, so it'll just not take into account any stat changes from abilities or
good
moves.
Good for clearing that up, because marketing will tell you it is a new ability when
it is technically a new ability.
cool.
But in conjunction with Sun Steel Strike, I think it's interesting because one of the main traits of that move is that it doesn't take into account the target's ability when you're attacking. I'm not sure it doesn't say what the type of that move is. It looks like a fire move, but who knows?
But it's not a fire Pokemon.
So I don't know what typing that move is going to be. But I think there's a lot of ability checking going on with this Pokemon, which makes it interesting to play in battle, I think. So.
Okay. Totally.
I think it's weird also because it's not fire. So the sun Pokemon. It's a little surprising.
So I was expecting fire for sun and dark for moon, but no. So I don't know what's going on. I don't know.
Yeah, definitely a curveball for sure. I think everyone was expecting Solgaleo to be a fire type for sure.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what I thought Lunala was supposed to be.
So I'm actually really happy Solgaleo isn't fire type because we already have fire type lion Pokemon.
Yeah.
So I was going to be okay, yawn. So I'm kind of glad.
we have plenty of fire legendaries. And one of the problems with him is that I was worried about it feeling too much like the legendary beasts.
Raikou, Entei, Suicune.
Okay, so then the other Pokemon in the room is Lunala, which I am saying that right, I hope. This is the legendary you will be catching in Moon, and this is a psychic and ghost type Pokemon. So Lunala's ability is Shadow Shield, which they're also saying is new. Is that new?
Shadow Shield's new.
So
and
it isn't mentioned in the trailer. You have to read this on Pokemon.com or in a press release.
Yeah, in a press release.
So quickly, just it causes it to take less damage at full HP.
Yeah, which sounds really dumb at first, but it's really, really interesting if you consider that I've been saying Lunala because Luna, I don't know. But yeah. This Pokemon will probably carry a recovery move like Moonlight.
Totally.
I'm 99% sure it's going to be Moonlight.
Yeah, and if not, it has Moongeist Beam, which we'll get to that.
Right.
But I want to put that out there.
But Moonlight will allow it to recover HP. So at first it sounds like, oh, Shadow Shield's just going to make the beginning of the battle better. But I think if you couple that with like a recovery item like a berry or leftovers or something like that, and a recovery move like Recover or Moonlight, you're going to really extend the longevity of this Pokemon in battle. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really, really interesting. And now that they're allowing legendary Pokemon in the competitive scene, that makes it kind of a really powerful contender, especially with the Psychic Ghost typing. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that'll not be good with Dark-type Pokemon, but
totally,
still.
Yeah.
And then Moongeist Beam has the same trait as mm-hmm. Sunsteel Strike, which is it doesn't take into account the receiving Pokemon's ability. In the trailer, they use Gengar, which its ability is Levitate, so that it's definitely not a ground-type move.
Yeah, probably not the best example to use.
It's not really the best example for the ability dodging thing. I just think it's really cool that these Pokemon have ability-checking moves, which is like not really a huge thing
right now.
So that's really interesting.
Yeah. I guess we'll probably see a resurgence of, I don't know, Leech Seed and like any like move that just like plinks away at HP like constantly. Like, that seems like it's going to be a pretty good Pokemon counter for Lunala.
Yeah. That's the competitive metagame too, right? It's more about the long game than it is about the short-term game, right?
Right.
Basically chopping away at someone slowly.
Yeah, definitely.
Tank battles.
Yeah.
by the way, have we had a Psychic Ghost type Pokemon before, or is this the first one we've seen?
That's a good... I wonder if... Chimeko Psychic Ghost?
I think, hold on, I
have a Pokedex app on my phone.
Chimeko's just Psychic, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
I don't think it's Psychic Steel.
I have an app on my
phone. While she's checking that, let's talk about then, like, this Lunala itself looks
psychic.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, looks fantastic.
From Pokemon.
I think both legendaries they nailed it this time.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. They definitely represent their game very well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they look really cool. Like, the biology of Lunala with its, like, claw things is the coolest.
Yeah.
I love it.
Part of me was kind of hoping that it would become, or it would be poison type, just mm-hmm. because we've never had a poison legendary type. And since the introduction of fairy type Pokemon, poison types have kind of been, like, you know,
that.
More sought after than before. But didn't happen. But I'll take a Psychic Ghost.
Yeah.
It's a unique typing.
Yeah, there's
down.
Still time, right? They'll definitely, like, we can only hope for more legendaries in the vein of, like, that hidden stuff that you just didn't know was going to be in the game.
Right.
This
we'll
is clearly just the stuff on the box.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We have to get something else.
Yeah.
There will be eventually. Just with the patterns of the past Pokemon we've gotten, so.
Yeah. Very good. Very good.
Yeah. As far as I can tell, there hasn't been a Psychic Ghost. There's a whole list on Bulbapedia of Pokemon with unique typing, and it's not on there.
Gotcha.
Okay.
So...
Good catch,
please, Mama. Yeah, please let me know if there is one I'm forgetting about. There are over 700, so it's entirely likely.
And it's understandable, but email us at mvc@ign.com. All right, so then let's talk about character details. So we have a new professor I need help with this one. Kukui. Who, to me, looks like the most relaxed Poke professor yet.
Yeah.
It's almost gotten to the point where just put a lab coat on him. Like, that's it, or her.
What's up with these male model Pokemon
professors. I was about to say.
Yeah, where's your female?
Pokemon Company, though, like, saw what they did with Professor Sycamore. Fans loved him. He's super handsome, rugged.
That fan art.
French.
And French.
Yeah. So, like, they just took it to the next level with, like, bare torso and, like, everything. Just, mm-hmm. like, super mm-hmm. mellow looking.
Really?
I don't know. I think they're trying to cash in on that.
I saw on Twitter someone zoomed in and he does have a ring on his finger. So, sorry.
Bummer.
Yes, I take this. Yeah, I know.
Yes, he does.
Okay.
But, if you don't know, every Pokemon professor has a specialty that they study. So Oaks is the relationship between humans and Pokemon.
Mm-hmm.
Elms from the Johto region is Pokemon breeding, which that actually had a lot to do with the story of Johto. That was the introduction of eggs and breeding.
Right.
And that was a big driving force of that game, of those games. So Kukui's is moves. He studies Pokemon moves, which makes Sunsteel Strike, which is hard to say, and Moongeist Beam more interesting because those moves kind of have unique effects. I don't really think of many commonly used moves that do that with abilities.
Mm-hmm.
So it's usually an ability that counters abilities. These are moves that counter abilities. So I think there's a lot of connection to be made there with his studying of moves. And the Pokemon Company does say that that has a lot to do with the story.
So. Sure. No, it makes sense to put whatever is the main thing or feature behind a specific methodology or idea. In this case, being the professor from game to game.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's a good call. Anything to add?
I'm more interested in his assistant. Lily.
Oh,
she's
okay.
cute.
Okay.
The mysterious girl.
But yeah, but say, so, she's kind of sketch, though.
Yeah, we are going to get to that. No, that's the good point. I guess last thing on him I want to bring up is that in the trailer, they show him talking to you via what looks like Skype. And it's just, like, it has its own little in-game Skype. That's not new to Pokemon. However, the UI had, and this could just be UI flair, but it had, you know, a video recording button. Obviously, it had a photo button, then it had a settings button. I'm just hoping, and that just got thinking in my mind, that the last two Pokemon games, which have been on 3DS and do support Miiverse, do not take advantage of that. You cannot share screenshots. You cannot take them. You cannot put them on social media in any way, shape, or form. And I feel like that's a missed opportunity with Pokemon, honestly. Like, I know that Pokemon Company strives to preserve the mystery of those games. They definitely want you, even though you can jump on the internet and go to a guide, they don't want you having easy access to some of that stuff. They want to preserve the experience. But I do think it's a missed opportunity, especially since games are more and more social today than they've ever been.
Yeah, and Pokemon's super shareable. We saw with all the fan art of the starters. And I've already seen fan art of Lily.
Of course.
Like hours after they announced her, there's really cute fan art of her. Like,
yeah, so this
that community is really shareable.
Yeah, so this isn't a case of like smoke and fire, like me saying, oh, well, that's going to happen.
Yeah.
More the case that this set off in my mind, I really do hope this game will embrace that because I do think stuff like that is important to sharing your game experience, and that's cool.
Yeah, and Kukui also says in that same scene you're talking about that the region is chock full of rare Pokemon. And I don't really know if that means...
Lies! No, I'm kidding.
Well, they did say, if you're reading on the Pokemon website or in a press release or something, they say there's like a lot of new Pokemon undiscovered species that are...
Right.
So it sounds like they're adding a lot to this already very large roster. But I don't know if rare Pokemon necessarily means new Pokemon. I mean, sometimes that's the language the Pokemon games use. It's like, oh, there's rare Pokemon in this region. You just mean like they're not in Kanto.
It's a good thing to point out, and especially this year of all years where Pokemon's 20th anniversary, if you're on the internet or if you're connected to the Mystery Gift, you're getting rare Pokemon every other
week.
Yeah, two weeks.
Get that Manaphy.
Yeah, that's right. This week, make sure you get on that. Okay, so let's talk then about, so his assistant is named Lily. Very sketch looking. From the beginning of marketing, called Mysterious.
Right, and like even on the website, she's his assistant for personal reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's kind of weird.
Like she's in it for some personal gain or something.
You think she's a villain?
I don't know. Like, she looks very angry at her portrait.
Yeah,
she's like sort of Lolita-esque, but like scary.
I was thinking more of a personified Gothitelle.
Oh,
man.
But in the last statement of her little bio and the details on Pokemon.com, it says that she will become very important to this story.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking she's totally going to be a villain.
She's like N, basically,
right?
Yeah,
she could be. Yeah.
So an interesting thing, too, is with what her professor is studying, it kind of contrasts with what she dislikes because she is not fond of Pokemon fighting.
Oh, that's right.
It's like, how can you be okay with him studying movesets if you don't like them fighting?
That's
good point. Good catch.
Yeah, and even in the professor's bio on the site, they say he has even taken hits himself to study moves.
Wow.
She's more bookish and she's more into reading and she doesn't like fighting. So there's this weird, like, tension of, like, why would you be the assistant to a professor who studies things you hate about Pokemon?
Yeah, maybe she's planning some underground
liberation
movement.
Double agent.
Under that huge
The new Team Rocket.
Very N-like, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Or Lysander, or whatever.
And if you're familiar, N was the main villain in, what, Black and White?
Black and White. Gen 5.
Okay, cool.
Yep.
So then we have, finally on the character front, your new friend and also potential rival. I mean, it's very unclear. They introduce him as a friend.
Yeah,
pronounce that name.
They've been, it's definitely Hawaii inspired, so I'm not entirely sure. But
sorry, guys.
They've been moving away from the full-on rival into like friendly rival thing for a while. So he's just like this friendly jumping around.
I was really good at that because each friend had a different discipline they were into.
I liked dancing.
Although I wish they had taken that a step further and there had been something more involving dance in that game.
Yeah.
But whatever. Like, regardless.
I liked that
maybe
a lot.
Next time.
Yeah.
Maybe this time.
Point. Maybe this time.
Hope so.
We don't know. We don't know
yet. Yeah, like a luau with Pokemon.
Yeah,
Blossom in the luau.
So cute.
Make it happen. Fan art.
Yeah, and then in the scene in the trailer where Hal shows up, you also see Lily's very like angry smirk. Again, I don't know what's up with her.
I want to cosplay her so bad.
Yeah. So then last section for us is your new region details and miscellaneous stuff. So we know that the Aloha region is made up of several islands.
Alola.
Excuse me. I spelled that wrong. Autocorrect. That's what happened. I'm like, why did I spell it that way? So we have four islands on the map, but three are natural. One is man-made. Makes you wonder what's going on there. That's probably going to lead into something. But again, that point, chock full of nothing but rare Pokemon, according to the professor.
Yeah, and I think the man-made one, I think it's four islands plus the man-made one, as far as I could tell.
On the map, there's
four,
the little tiny
and the
little
man-made one's
one.
Kind of in the
center.
So
I got the number count wrong. There we go. Four.
Yeah, it's four and then
one.
This like baby
so five
one.
Total.
Yeah. And I imagine that the man-made nature is going to be interesting. It reminds me of sort of like the power plants in the first Pokemon games where there's like Pokemon specific to that very industrial environment versus the natural environment of the regular islands. So I'm really interested to see how that goes.
It's also really, really small comparatively, though. Like, I'm thinking like it definitely might take the form of like the Elite Four Pokemon League or
maybe
like a battle resort type thing.
Maybe something like a battle resort.
It could have been that resort we saw in the concept art.
The concept art also looked like a battle resort.
Yeah, it did.
So it's unclear. I hope it has something to do with like non-natural looking Pokemon. I also hope there's more fire type Pokemon with volcanoes because
there's
so many volcanoes.
There were so many.
And that's you need that tight balance. And I think with an island like a island region, you kind of run into that trap. So I like that they're doing this man-made island. I hope there's unique Pokemon that can be found there of different typing. You don't want to fall into the one type or the like one kind of ecology trap. And I think volcanoes
sure,
and man-made.
Sure.
Yeah, like even one of them is like super tall. Like looking at the map, the biggest island has like a snow-covered mountain.
Yeah.
Or I guess maybe a dormant volcano.
Yeah.
So it definitely seems like it has geological differences, even though they're all islands.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I'm stoked about that. And each one looks like pretty big. So like to me, it feels like almost like you have like four different regions like completely to play with.
Yeah, it looks a lot bigger, at least from the map we see in that trailer, than previous regions, which is super exciting to me.
Definitely.
I want more adventure.
Yeah, I will say, so I was very happy to see that map. I'm also hoping that Fly returns the way it was done in Omega Ruby and Alpha.
Yeah,
the actual ability to fly over and like see that stuff, I think would be a lot better. But I will say that the stuff they showed in-game of the island in general, I don't mean to kind of attack him over this, but it did seem just very run-of-the-mill, very lame to me. Like, it's just, you know, your character running through empty fields. Like, they didn't look lively at all. And even when they went to the one section, which is a town, you barely saw anyone there. And, of course, this could be about the long game. They can show more stuff over time. Mm-hmm. But in terms of just your actual in-game gameplay, didn't really look like anything special to
me. In the previous trailer, we did see kind of a sort of like a beachside strand, and there was like a truck and a guy, and there were things going on there.
Yeah. Even think of the concept art we saw in that first reveal
so
where there were like these cars and things, and you're like,
man,
this place is going to be alive. And so far, I just haven't seen that.
Doesn't look like that, although they are set. There is like a disclaimer at the bottom that's like in-game footage, not final. So I wonder if that's kind of like not part of what they're showing right now, but I would like to see it be more lively. And then we also see that there's clearly a day-night cycle again.
Which is good. Important. Yeah. Go ahead, please.
Oh, sure. I was just going to mention that the last Japanese commercial that came out for Pokemon Sun and Moon, there's a bunch of videos on YouTube analyzing it, and they had noted that there was they accidentally had left a unannounced Pokemon in the overworld.
Oh, I saw this.
So I'm wondering if Pokemon Company, took note of that and were just like trying to like reveal as little as possible for this trailer.
No, that's good.
Yeah. That's a good
really
point.
Good thing to think about. So then I guess our combined favorite thing is next, and it is that the Pokedex is not your run-of-the-mill Pokedex that you've been seeing.
Your Pokedex is a Pokemon.
Yeah, so Rotom, which is a Pokemon that was introduced in Diamond and Pearl, will possess and can possess household appliances, apparently will possess your Pokedex because it's a specially made device for it. And it will interact with you. It will talk with you. Quote, a whole new way for people and Pokemon to communicate.
Yeah, so there's a couple interesting things here. It doesn't seem like a new Rotom form. Like, there's different forms. There's, like, I think the popular ones are Rotom Wash and Rotom Mow, which are the washing machine and lawnmower ones, respectively. But this seems more like a companion, which we haven't really seen in Pokemon before. I mean, you have your friends or your rivals who kind of help guide you along your journey, but you never have like a always by your side companion giving you advice.
Yeah, whereas you think of the anime, that was the thing that the Pokedex did.
Yeah,
it was always offering you robotic advice.
And this Pokedex was supposed to have more of a personality because there's a Pokemon inhabiting mm-hmm. it. And you kind of see in the trailer, it says something like, careful with the goods or whatever it says.
Yeah, it's like a Navi role.
That's what I said in my rewind.
It's like,
yeah.
Hey,
or something a little closer to it would be Whisper in Yo-Kai Watch.
Very much like Whisper in Yo-Kai Watch, especially because Rotom's a ghost.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, hey. By accident, we swear.
Taking a page out of Yo-Kai Watch's book.
Maybe. Well, I mean, Yo-Kai Watch blew up in Japan.
Yo-Kai
not
Watch
really
took
worldwide.
A lot of pages out of Pokemon's book.
It's only fair. Reciprocate.
Exchange of ideas, yeah.
So in Japan, or at least on the Japanese Pokemon website for Pokemon, someone found a video of the actual action of opening Rotom, and it looks really cool.
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, really, really cool stuff. I'm just really excited about this because this also feels like a very kid-friendly thing in terms of kids can get lost in games like this, and so having an assistant who can point it out. But at the same time, you know, Pokemon Company, if you're listening, don't make it the overbearing, like, Fi type from
like
Zelda
Professor
Skyward Sword.
Like Professor E-Gad in Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon.
Yeah.
That was the worst. It was
every
like
couple seconds.
Every 5 minutes, I'm like, I know where I'm going.
Just trust me, please.
I hope
remember
this
to take
is...
a break.
Yeah. Don't tell me what to do. I hope that this is more of an opt-in. Like you can, because it's saying in the description on the website, it was saying like this Pokedex is going to keep track of conversations you have and give you advice based on that. And I hope that you can go into the Pokedex, open it up, and it's part of something you could access, not like a buzzing in your ear all the time.
No, well, that helps too, even just keeping track of conversation, because I feel like whenever I take a long break from a game, if I don't remember what was said to me,
it's like the Bomber's Notebook in Majora's Mask that keeps track of everything you've learned from talking to people. Like that's really useful.
Yeah, or most, I feel like most modern RPGs at least had leaned on some sort of a system of here's a log of everything that was said to you, like even Diablo 3 or take whatever you will.
It's really, really useful. It seems like it's shaping up to not be one of those annoying, like, hello, it's been 5 minutes. Are you still doing okay?
Hey, yeah. Listen.
I'm like, shut up.
There's a 90% chance you're going to catch whatever.
It better not be talking to me the whole time.
Although still, also just jumping back to game footage real quick, no tiptoe, no, like, I'm just looking for things that showed up in Omega Ruby Alpha Sapphire that were cool experiments to me. Like, I really like the idea of being able to sort of scan an area, find a certain type, and then try and go for a catch because there was something unique that it would give you. No signs that that's returning so far.
I imagine it would. There's also something I want to point out is there's you can scan QR codes to get
that was the next thing I was going
to
bring up. Yeah,
Pokedex info, which normally you'd have to either encounter the Pokemon or get in a trader, capture it to get more info on it. I think what they're moving towards, especially with like the DexNav stuff in the previous game games, it seems like they're trying to make it easier to catch all these Pokemon because the gotta catch them all thing is getting really, really hard.
Especially as they increase the number.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So the QR code is going to make it easier to find where Pokemon are. And I imagine they wouldn't throw out all of the advances in catching Pokemon and catching Pokemon with hidden abilities and stuff that they introduced in with the Tiptoe and the DexNav. So even though we haven't seen it, I really don't think they would get rid of it.
Sure.
They just keep showing signs that they're like, we know catching Pokemon's really hard, and if you have a hard time, here's an easier way to do it.
Totally.
Yeah.
Although it wouldn't be the first time that they threw away a feature that was well-loved in a previous Pokemon game, though.
That's true.
Let's not forget HeartGold, SoulSilver's buddy system with the Pokemon that followed you.
That was
R.I.P.
so good.
Yeah.
Well,
why not?
Right?
You feel so much more comfortable, and you just... That's like the big thing I love so much from Pokemon Yellow, and I valued. And then you get the buddy system; you get to change them out, and you get to say, "Hey, you're my best friend right now.
Maybe
not later."
Yep.
Yeah. No, and it almost feels like what's the excuse? Because every you would imagine that the game has every model in it that would be seen from you know, sort of the world and game perspective.
Well, I mean, there's the argument that you know a different team was working on HeartGold, SoulSilver, while another team was working on Black and White. So like, there's that. But like, they have the model somewhere. Like, just throw them in, please.
Yeah, no, it's fun.
It's help them. Just numbers, you know, for day.
Yeah, no, it's personality. So then let's talk about the future. What is our hopes for the future of Pokemon related updates? We've gotten two so far.
Yeah, aside from the teaser with the concept art.
Yeah, the teaser really was the announce. Sadly, you guys got scooped by the internet. But whereas this time you didn't. Good job.
Yep.
Just want to say. But going forward, like what's a part of the game that you want to hear more about, or if not, what's a general direction you're hoping that they're going to take? Who wants to jump in?
I just want to see more of the starters. Like, I want to see their evolutions. I want to know if Popplio stands a chance against the other ones. I've seen, of course, there's plenty of fake things going around. Like, there's this was from a magazine. I saw one that
potential Korokoro.
Yeah, I saw one that looked somewhat convincing, and I could see like a lot of people getting confused by that.
Totally.
Just, like, just clarify it.
I saw that as well, yeah.
Yeah, I that would be a really
I want
great,
a confirmation.
Yeah, just let us know soon.
Yeah, yeah.
Who we want to love.
Totally.
Okay, okay, fair enough. Mondo?
Yeah, definitely would love to see the Starter Evolutions for sure. But part of me wants to keep that a little secret until I actually play. But knowing the internet's not going to happen.
Yeah. On Reddit, it'll be kept secret. Yeah. Like the last update, sorry, not to cut you off, but
fine,
the last update, I was just telling this to Callie, every thread was highlighted as spoiler tags.
Yep. Oh,
to
wow.
not tell you anything. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, these are starters. This is not that big a deal.
Spoiler.
Yeah. And it was like, nope, we will not.
You see them at the beginning of the game anyway.
But I also feel
like this is not to disrespect the folks who want to keep it spoiler free. Mm-hmm. Like, I totally hear where you're coming from. I just think there's spoiler free and then there's a step too far myself.
Totally.
But you were going to say.
Yeah. Yeah, same. I totally feel that, for sure. But aside from that, I just want a lot more Pokemon. Like, I was kind of disappointed at the roster size of X and Y. Like, granted, I loved most of those Pokemon. They were really cool designs, really cool movesets. But I just want to see a lot more. I want to see more pre-evolutions, baby evolutions of Pokemon. I want to see more evolutions, not just mega evolutions of, like, Pokemon that didn't get evolutions in the past, like Jinx.
What about primal reversions? What was that? Was that a thing that will never happen again?
No, like, I don't know. It's hard to say. They haven't really hinted at it happening to any other, like, Pokemon. But if I saw a primal Lugia or a primal Ho-Oh, I'd be super down.
Oh,
I wouldn't say no.
I want more poison types. Mm-hmm. I think you brought up a good point that there hasn't been a poison type legendary. There's always a third, so make it happen.
It's
also,
true.
Psychic poison is like a sick type combo.
Psychic poison?
Yeah.
Totally.
So,
I agree.
I love poison types, and there's just not enough good ones. And I also want to see what they're... if they are tweaking anything with kind of the competitive aspect of, EVs, if they're going to carry over super training or if they're going to modify that anymore. And obviously the 2016 competitive landscape is different than previous years by allowing legendaries. So I'm interested to see how that factors into this game, as well as like the post game. I think they did something really interesting with the Delta episode in Oris. And I'm interested in seeing how they carry through, because a lot of people play Pokemon far beyond the main story because they're training Pokemon and breeding Pokemon, and I'm interested to see like what if they do anything with post game.
Yeah,
obviously we wouldn't get that in a reveal before the games came out because that's like an actual spoiler.
Totally.
Yeah,
but
totally.
Going forward, I want to see more of the world, I guess, for actual reveals. I want to see more of what Alola is and how big it is and what the cities are like.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So for me, I'm hoping that at least Pokemon Company takes... so far, they've had two updates that have kind of lit the internet on fire in terms of what folks saw and what you've shown is cool. What I'm hoping for the future is just that, you know, once or twice a month, you're doing these updates consistently. Mm-hmm. I think that the long tail on this is really big. You can learn something from Smash Brothers, and it is that people want to know everything about your game, and you don't have to go that far. You don't have to do a Monday to Friday screenshot bonanza with, like, you know, these hint, wink, 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 hint, hint captions. But instead, what would be good was for you to go ahead and, like, put more of that info out there and not just wait for, you know, Nintendo Directs to kind of deliver that message. And so far, I think they've been basically doing that. Like, if you think about it, all three pieces of information that they've delivered have been on their own.
Mm-hmm.
They have not been part of like Nintendo's usual rollout strategy for this stuff. And obviously, Pokemon Company is an independent entity within Nintendo, but it's still something to just note as like, hey, these guys are pretty much owning it themselves. So yeah, do that. You know, I want to see another one in July. I want to see another one in August, September, October, until the game's release in November 18th.
Yeah, I think they could keep that up too because of how they've rolled out the past few updates. They're small enough, but still important enough to give us enough information. And of course, there's tons we don't know. So I think they could absolutely do that.
Sweet. All right.
Well, I guess we'll wait to see what happens at E3.
Well, at E3, you're going to see gameplay, that's for sure. But let's see if they actually pull off something really big, because they've said they will be at the show. In fact, Treehouse Live on Tuesday at 9 a.m. is now kicking off with Pokemon, and then we'll transition to Zelda.
Sweet.
So if you're watching E3, you can actually catch that stream on IGN, and you should, because we're also going to have a post-show, which will be awesome. I'm not sure if we're doing a pre-show yet.
We are doing a pre-show as well.
Okay, we are doing a pre-show as well.
It's NVC plus Cali.
Oh, nice.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
There you go. All right, cool. Well, thank you very much. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we have another panel of folks talking about Nintendo at E3, and we have a special guest from the speedrunner community, so stick around. We have another panel here, so I got to do quick introductions. I'm Jose Otero. Brian Altano's here.
What's up?
Parrish Schneider's here.
Hello.
And special guest, David Grand Pooh Bear Hunt is here.
Aw, Pooh.
Oh, how's it going, guys? Nice
hey,
to be here.
It's great to have you on, man.
Yeah,
thanks for coming. So what should we call you?
Pooh, David, okay, Pooh, whatever, Grand Pooh.
Okay.
That sounds weirder, though. Yeah. Just GPB, you know, whatever works for you guys.
So for folks who don't know David is a speedrunner.
Yes, sir.
Who, both on Twitch and your work is also on YouTube.
Yes, sir.
You have a few claims to fame, one being that you beat Cape Escape.
Yes.
Which is a nefariously brutal Super Mario Maker level made by none other than the internet's Panga Panga, known for some of the most devious stuff you'll ever see in Mario Maker, I think, right? That's fair.
He's probably the top dog as far as ridiculous levels are concerned.
And you
yeah.
beat it in less than 2 weeks.
Yes, I was the first one to beat
it. Hold on a second. Less than 2 weeks.
Well, okay, and that sounds like a long time. Actually, it took me 40 total hours of gameplay, including practice, and that's not even the longest level that ever. I played another one for 100 hours, actually, but this one is the one that got me the most popular. I was the first one to beat it. I was the only one to beat it for like a month and a half. And, it was a claim to fame. When I beat it, I never thought it would be a big deal, honestly. Sure. I just thought it was just another all right, level done.
But why would you do something like that? do you have this gene that makes you like impervious to repetition?
I'm very patient. Very patient, and I do have a desire to if it's easy, I don't necessarily. It's not as fun for me. Definitely am someone who I don't want to say likes pain, but I definitely.
Do you like hot candle wax on your skin?
not quite into that, but
there has to be at least a distinct level of stubbornness that goes with that.
Oh
right?
Yeah, for sure. There's definitely times where I think to myself, it'd be a lot easier to just move on and play something else. But I think once you, part of it too is you're doing it in public. So once you start, you can't stop. You can't start, get halfway through it and be like, all right, guys, I don't really feel like doing it.
Oh, I can too. Well, are you familiar with sunken cost fallacy?
Exactly.
Yeah, I know. It's basically saying, I put 40 hours into this, so I might as well put another 20 hours in, because otherwise I lose the 40 hours.
Oh, and that's Final Fantasy 13.
You could lose 60 total.
On cost. I get it. But do you get angry? Let's say you're 10 hours in and you keep on falling, restart. You're really fast, I assume, at restarting.
Lots of restarts. Restarting is the number one thing. I think with speedrunning, the golden rule of speedrunning is resets get records.
Right.
So you're used to it. I think you're used to a certain amount of repetition or frustration or failure. I mean, I guess just failure in general. I think you're always trying to achieve the perfect run.
Mm-hmm.
In Mario Maker, kind of the perfect run. You know, in speedrunning, you're talking about a whole game. Well, in Mario Maker, basically these whole games are boiled down into these one ridiculous level. Ridiculous level. And the resets are just part of it. I don't know. It's just part of it. You
gotta put that on a shirt. Resets
get records. If I made that up, I would totally get that. But I stole that.
So is that a little easier to digest than say speedrunning an entire Mario game? Well, can you focus on one level? I know there's nothing easy about any of this.
I think it's easier to digest because each in Mario Maker, you're only a minute away.
Right.
You're always only a minute away. and like other great things in life, you're only a minute away.
Yeah.
And I think that makes the resets a lot easier because even if you get to the very end, you know, and trust me, most of these levels, you get to the very end and mess up at the end more times than not, it's it's always just a minute. The next one's going to be the run, guys.
Right.
The next one's going to be the run, guys. Don't worry. And that's, and part of it, I think, for the viewers too, is the next one's going to be the run. Yep. They can't leave, because if they leave even for a minute, they go to the bathroom. Every time I beat one of these levels, inevitably someone comes back and is like, "Oh, I missed it. I was in the bathroom. I was making cookies." Like, and that's what happens.
I was making cookies. Yeah, yeah. No, but this reminds me of when I played your Mario Maker creation,
right?
Where I think it was just called Run. Like, yeah, that was all, because you couldn't think of anything else.
That was one
solid
of the first
title.
Thanks, man. It was one of the first Mario Maker levels
to make it.
To be fair, I didn't have to be very creative with the title. Nowadays, that wouldn't stick out very well.
But that level was so mean, and each time, if you ever watch the video, I am like furious, but I'm trying to hold it in.
Yeah.
And also, just like, okay, the next one is it. I got further and further and further, and then finally, I did get through.
It was like co-hosting a video with like a pot of water that was boiling that just had the lid on. It was just like rattling. I'm like, this thing is going to hit the ceiling.
I took tissues. I wiped my eyes afterwards. I was ready to pop.
It got like, hot in there.
Yeah. So you get the excitement, though.
Sure.
And that joy, like, expand that joy over 40, 50, 60 hours of something that nobody else has ever done in the world. And, like, it's worth
it. Now you're changing the definition of joy a little bit.
I know. It's rough. It's an interesting feeling, but it's one I kind of fiend, I guess.
See, when my water starts boiling, the joy just evaporates. And yeah. Like, I just cannot do something that long. But I hear you, back in the NES days, Super NES days, you had some games that had ridiculously difficult boss levels.
Right. Yeah.
Obviously, Dark Souls brought some of that back, right? Yeah. But like, it was so rewarding to finally beat the boss. Even if you did it with a glitch, you still had this like level of satisfaction.
There was also, I think, like, there's the sort of reasoning that goes with giving up on anything early now is that there is so much media to consume. There's so many things to do. There's so many different things you could be doing with your time. And back in the day, if you grew up on the NES or the Super NES, cartridge games and consoles, you would like rent a game or you'd get a game as a gift. That was your game.
That was your game.
And if you didn't want to play it, you were not playing video games. That was your only choice.
And bear in mind that games were more designed after the arcade era, which was very much put in another quarter,
Totally.
And even home consoles for a while, they kind of carried that mentality until people started to challenge that design and come up with other ways to hook you with what a game is. So that's another just fascinating part of it all, right? Like, all of it started just around that there's a little bit of fun and I'm going to have it for a little bit and I can die, but I can always start it over and try and see how far I get next time.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, it's fascinating.
I cut my teeth with NES and SNES, and I mean, I like Ghosts and Goblins, you know, way more than most of the games that are made today.
So that
personally
gave you an understanding of pain at a very young age.
And
sorrow.
And then the vulnerability of being a half-naked man running through a cemetery. Like, you get touched once and you're in your boxer shorts. You're like, well, I got to deal with this.
Armor was not that great. I don't know who made it, but it's not Valerian steel armor over there.
It's such a brilliant idea to have you like lose your clothes and then you're like, you just feel so bad, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Mario shrunk, which is like one way to do it, but Arthur just like straight up just going half naked, you're like,
and you don't have to explain. You don't have to explain to the player that one more hit and that's it. Yeah. Like, you can see it.
It was very clear. Yet at the same time, when he had his armor on, it was a very heroic run and stride. But without his armor, it looked like a frantic, crazy man in the middle of a cemetery, hoping to make it out.
So brilliant.
Just an observation. Just one.
It did.
Yeah, but regardless of the semi-hard time these two are giving you, we do have tremendous respect for the amount of work that takes. Just want to make that like super clear.
It's crazy too. I mean, it's kind of insane. You guys feel free to mock it all you want.
We're just saying we can't do that.
It takes a certain amount of OCD, I guess I would say, for sure. It definitely takes that.
And is it a job now for you? Is it part-time?
It's 90% of my working time. I do. I still have other gigs I do. I announce things for a living. I talk on microphones for a living. So I still occasionally take those gigs, but I'm much more focused on Twitch and speedrunning and Mario.
And you live in the Bay Area?
I live in Northern California, Tahoe, in the mountains.
Nice.
Deep in the mountains, I heard you go up there a lot, you know? Hit me up.
That's awesome up
there.
We'll
hook you up.
I love it. We go to Truckee all the time.
Okay.
Beautiful.
I'm in South Lake.
Nice.
Yeah.
We're going to swing by.
The party
have
side.
A little Mario party there. awesome. Well, then I understand. Like, you live in the mountains and there's just bears outside, so you don't want to go outside.
Exactly.
So you play Mario, right?
I was just telling him, we had our first 70-degree day yesterday, we have no reason to go outside yet.
Don't go outside.
Then diving back a little deeper before we talk about the other thing that sort of made you famous on the internet, which we'll get to, is talk a little bit about getting into speedrunning, if you don't mind. Like, what sort of set off that in your mind? Like, were you always into just playing a lot of games and playing them quickly? Like, what was it?
No. Actually, my other favorite genre of games outside of platforming games is I like survival games. I like H1Z1. I like battle royales. Mm-hmm. I really gravitate to anything that's hard. I think one day I was just kind of it was last SGDQ that I watched, and I kind of had just decided, like, you know, I want to get really, really good at a game. So I picked my favorite game of all time, Mario 3, and I just decided, like, all right, I'm going to speedrun this game. So I was like, all right, I'm going to play this as fast as I can. My first run, I didn't even finish the game. Mm-hmm. And then I started watching videos of everyone else doing it. I found Mitch Flowerpower, who's now one of my best friends in the world. And I started emulating his strats and emulating what he did, and, you know, was getting better and better and better and better. And then Mario Maker came out, and I discovered all the Panga levels and started playing those, and that just kind of increased me on Twitch and increased my popularity and just kind of increased my focus to be just, I just want to play platforming games. That's what, right, I like, you know? Yeah.
Totally. And specifically hard platforming games,
specifically,
right?
I very much so like hard platforming games. I like ROM hacks. I like Kaizo Mario World.
Right.
I'm the world record holder in Kaizo Mario 3 right now, unless Mitch took it back as we speak. As we're talking right now, he's trying to do it.
So for folks at home, just two quick things. So SGDQ, we've talked about it on the show before, but it is Summer Games Done Quick. And then Kaizo Mario 3 is a mod that basically was made by someone in Japan that is these insanely difficult Mario levels before Mario Maker was a thing. Yeah. Kaizo Mario.
Yeah, check those on YouTube, because we've been talking about them for a while, even before Mario Maker came out, just as sort of an example of what we wanted to see. And I think when Mario Maker first happened, we didn't see a lot of stuff like that, and then it got out into the hands of the demonic public, and they started making some of the most insane, wonderful, evil levels. It was great.
So if you're watching the video and you're noticing Pear look around the room every once in a while, it's because we have a fly in here, and I warned everyone that this is going to turn into that episode of Breaking Bad where a lot of bad things happen.
I should have brought chopsticks.
So do you ever like relax in like a Sunday afternoon with like a glass of wine and like a Kirby game or something like that? Something slippy?
Kirby's one of the most popular speedrun games, actually.
Really?
So, oh, yeah, it's hugely popular in the speedrun community.
I had no idea. It just seems so fluttering.
I still do casual play. I'm casually playing through Resident Evil 2 right now. I busted out my PS1. I'm casually playing through Resident Evil 2 right now. But even then, I always find myself thinking, I can do that faster.
Right.
And then I'll reload a save and then try to just do it faster. And it's kind of become an obsession. I have a real struggle playing any game that has a beginning, middle, and end and not thinking to myself, how can I optimize this? How can I make this faster? How can I do this faster?
What about a brand new game? Like, say something like Uncharted 4 comes out, or like there's a new Metroid Prime, a new Zelda game.
I don't want to say a problem, but I don't want to say it affects my enjoyment, because I like to think that speedrunning increases my enjoyment of games. I like to think that. I like to claim that. But yes, I would say generally when I'm playing a game now, I definitely think about, how can I do this faster? Is that glitchable? When you accidentally do a glitch, then it's like, I'm going to spend the next 3 hours trying to recreate
it.
Trying to recreate it.
I mean this in the nicest way possible, but you're sort of fundamentally broken in the head when it comes to stuff like this.
It's broken in the nicest way possible. However the developer wanted me to play the game, I'm wanting to circumvent that and play it a way he didn't want. I want to break it. I want to show him, not that where he messed up, but like where he missed something, either missed something or his code's wrong or something. I want to make this go faster.
So you're seeing the Matrix version of the game.
Kind of, to a point, yeah.
When you get a new game and they're like unskippable cutscenes, so you just break out in a sweat.
Not the first playthrough, but definitely the second playthrough.
Oh, really?
100%. When you have unskippable cutscenes, like going back to RE2 on PS1, the doors. Every time a door happens, I'm just like, oh my god.
That animation.
Oh my god. Yeah.
I never pictured it that way. So then never really. Like just sort of switching that off, always like that somewhere.
I think there are some games where I don't like. I love Link to the Past, and I refuse to ever run that game because I don't want to ever hate it. Mm-hmm. I love that game. I love doing playthroughs of it occasionally throughout the years. But I will say that every game eventually, it all comes down to how fast can you go, no matter what you're doing.
So do you eventually grow to hate the games that you put 40, 50, 60 hours, hundreds of hours
in? I don't hate them. I hate I hate certain moments that they make me feel like, that's like I don't hate the games. I love the games. I hate failing. I hate, you know what? It's not the games. I think you're eventually you hate failing when you're good at something. Like when you know how to do something and then you just don't do it for whatever reason, you hate yourself a little bit. Right. That's still the wrong thing to say.
No,
like,
but you know what you mean. It's that disappointment that comes with a failure in execution.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's not necessarily as sort of deep as self-loathing or anything like that, but there is that sort of constantly setting yourself up into thinking that you can accomplish something, letting yourself down, and then overcoming that yourself.
It's like when Steph Curry misses a free throw. That's the feeling I get when, in games, more than like hating it. It's just like, I should have done that better. You know?
So as in the lead up to the show, I asked David to make us a Mario Maker level that I was going to try to play, and to take it easy on us because we're old men clearly in this room, but we're not on your level in terms of skill. But I was like, let me just see. And he hooked it up. He made me a level. He also sent me a video. He's like, this is how you'll be able to beat it. And I'm like, oh, cool. And so I load it up on my desk and get started. I must have died 100 times in the first 2 minutes.
Really?
But at the same time, I felt the satisfaction of, I finally got that jump right.
Yeah.
Oh, I finally got this part right. Now, to be fair, I still have not beat that level. I had to stop for other reasons, work-related, and I wanted to give it to some weekends to practice on it. I haven't, so I owe you an apology. But I do kind of understand and can relate to what he's talking about because I almost don't want to lose to it. I'm just like, I can do this. If this can be done, I should be able to pull this off.
Yes.
And so that's why
you don't want to get beat by a level, you don't want to get beat by code. And especially because in Mario Maker 2, it's like most of these guys now are the levels I'm playing. These guys are my friends, I've grown relationships with them and real life relationships with them. I especially don't want to let them beat me because I know them, I don't.
It's competition.
Exactly.
So do you now have this like in sort of tight network of people who are deliberately creating levels to inflict pain and endurance and damage onto the other people in the group of friends?
Yeah, totally. I think, just like any other gaming community, Mario Maker community has its very, its very dedicated fans. And then we were even broken down more into more niches of, people who make traditional levels and people who make puzzle levels, like one screen puzzle levels, which are awesome. And then people who make Kaizo levels, which is kind of funny that Kaizo just means rearrange, but now it's kind of taken on like a meaning of hard,
it means evil.
Devilish, hard, trolly, I kind of really like the troll level. I like the invisible blocks when you hit it. And I think it's funny. Yeah. I think it's great. I like dying like that. Yeah.
One of my favorite videos on IGN was Brendan and I playing a level, and he's right at the flagpole. And I'm like, just jump for the flagpole. He's like, no, I'm going to wait till the bus all passes. Then he jumps for it, and he plummets straight into a pit. And that video got watched more than, I can't even tell you how many videos on the site because of that ending.
Yeah.
And it was something completely unplanned. It was like, oh, my God, we're done. I'm not playing that level.
It's funny.
It is.
But, now in the Mario Maker still doesn't let you organize content by the different kind of tags like Kaizo puzzle, right? It's like you still have to there's this meta game of finding the creators outside of Mario Maker in order to know what they post and where they are, right?
It's actually kind of funny you said that because I'm actually part of a group, me, Mitch Flowerpower, Panga, Carl Sagan, and our friend Jakku and TriWave. I had to name drop all of them.
How did Carl Sagan come out of that with a real name and everyone else got?
Well, no, that's not his real name. He stole it from the famous astronomer,
that's
actually.
Awesome.
And what's funnier, even he's a scientist, but not an astronomer. He's a biologist. So, so a little strange.
Good job, Carl.
Actually, the only one who had Jakku's the real name.
Wow.
I know. We're making a website called makersofmario.com, which probably is going to get shut down after this goes out. It's basically going to allow you to a better database. We're going to allow you to tag things as one screen puzzle, Kaizo, super expert.
Awesome.
We're going to allow you to search for that. We're going to allow you to make playlists of all of these levels you want to do. So if you want to make a whole world, you want to make a whole game, your own game, you know what I mean? IGN can make it their whole game, put that playlist out. Everyone can just download it straight to their Wii U. We're also going to have a place for races where you can make a race. Like, let's say you want to race him and you want to pick these specific levels. You can sign up on our website and do it all right there. So we're kind of, because Nintendo wasn't going to do it, isn't doing it, we just kind of decided to take it on our own accord and do it ourselves. Yeah.
No, I like it. I like the approach, too.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
So then speaking of this community, and it seems like the relationship with Nintendo has kind of been all over the place because there have been good times and there have been rough times.
Yeah.
But none rougher than the morning of March 21st when you woke up, turned on your... Wii U to play Super Mario Maker, and you discovered that all of your levels and basically all of the medals that you earned were erased.
Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about this? This is the other thing in the room that, you know, a lot of people know.
Yeah, that was the other, my other big brush with internet fame, I guess, quote unquote, is...
that was you.
Yeah, that was me. I got all my levels deleted. It was obviously a big deal for me because I spend many, many hours on these levels. So outside of just the hours on top of it, it became my job, you know. It was kind of where I was making my income on Twitch and playing Mario Maker. When they took my levels was one thing, but they also deleted all my medals, which basically kind of labels you like a quote-unquote cheater. Mm-hmm. Well, obviously not a cheater. I was playing online. I played live in front of 200,000 people at AGDQ. Everyone knew I wasn't a cheater, so it wasn't that big a deal. But to the outside world, if you weren't familiar with, you know, reading, you know, all the gaming news, you wouldn't know that, you know what I mean? You would just think this guy you were following on the internet.
And props to Kotaku, who reported the story and just kind of shared your side of what happened.
So what happened?
Okay, so this is the great part. So I called them to find out what happened, and they didn't tell me. They didn't explain to me why my levels got deleted. Originally, I thought it was because my name Pooh, and I had Pooh in some of my level names. Of course, there's a famous Earthbound character named Pooh. I'm sure you know that.
Yep. They named their console Wii.
I could get into that. Well, that's what I originally thought. Okay, so that's what I thought. Like, okay, it's because I named Pooh, but I also had like three or four levels. Like, Save the Yoshis was one of my levels name. Then I named one of mine Oopa Elip because it went left. All my levels were called Pile of Pooh because they went right, and then Oopa Elip went left. Uh-huh. So I was like, well, they deleted those too. So I called to figure out what would happen, and I got no response. I got a call back a week later, and all I got was Nintendo of Japan took them down, not Nintendo of America. We don't know why. We don't have any other reasons, but we can tell you that they're going to implement the reason why into the Wii U. You know, that's all they could tell me was that they're going to give you reasons now for when they delete your levels.
Well, for future, if I ever get my levels deleted again.
Yeah. So
and they mean everyone, like the general.
And they did do that. He told me, we'll call you back again when we know what happened.
Oh, so okay.
And so no, in a week later, I get one of those emails that says like, "Were you satisfied with your customer service?"
No,
and that was it, and that was the end of it, and they never called me back. I've kind of given up on it because it's not really a fight worth fighting for me.
Right.
It's, you know, it took up too much of my time. A lot of people on the internet just think I was whining, obviously, which I completely understand that. It's a very trivial thing in the grand scheme of the world, but at the same time, in my little tiny world...
It's your thing.
That's 400 hours.
Exactly.
But you also, I mean, whenever... And I'm sure, like, anybody who's ever left a comment on a forum and had that comment deleted, like, you immediately go, like... You kind of feel like violated for a moment, right?
You're like,
wait, what did I say? I didn't say anything wrong. Why did they ban me? Or like you're trying to follow somebody on Twitter and you're blocked. And you're like, I don't even know this person, right? Like, and so I totally understand your frustration. It just seems so weird that all of your levels will be wiped.
It's also the idea of losing something that's so specifically connected to the exact pattern of creativity that you built for that singular piece of content. Like when you're same thing with like writing out an internet comment or whatever you're doing that's coming from you directly, like you can try to recreate that. And I remember when we made our Mario Maker levels, people were like, can you send me that level code? And we're like, well, we actually can't.
No, yeah, because we were doing it on a pre-release version of the game, and so that stuff wasn't integrated into what became the online retail game.
So we kind of invited people to recreate it themselves, but, I mean, without any visual, and that's by then we already had a video up, but without something that's really backed up anywhere, you're just going by your memory, basically, and you're never going to get it the same.
Or a lot of pausing on YouTube.
I mean, that's, yeah.
Yeah, it's hard. Did you make glitch levels? Because I had a couple of them. I had like two levels removed because they're glitch levels, but I just...
If I didn't know they were glitches. Very well they could have been quote unquote glitches, but I wasn't aware that they're glitches.
Not an invisible block.
I think that's another thing though to go in Mario Maker. They've actually changed like how physics engines work in the game since then. So like P switches, I don't know if you guys know this, but P switches operate very differently from when the game was first released. And you can actually see it if you play a level that was released day one, then play a level that was released after the patch in January, and then play a level that was released now. there's actually three different physics engines in Mario Maker right now.
Interesting.
Like the way you throw the piece.
Okay, no,
like
the way you jump off it. So you used to be able to jump off and you had about 10 frames, about 1/6 of a second to go boop and jump off of it. Yep. Now you have about 1 frame right at the beginning, then you have a 4 frame pause, and then you got about 2 frames at the end, which is very, very awkward to jump off of. Mm-hmm. Made it extremely hard. just in this last patch, they actually took out, used to be able to, if a spring was sideways, you used to be able to jump on the spring and then jump up, like, off of it. Like, it would push you in, and then you could jump up. So you could do, like, these cool, like, tricks where you jump on the spring and kind of go up and, like, climb up spring walls.
And they
completely took it out. Yeah, they completely took it out in the last patch. But they don't tell you. They don't give you patch notes. You don't know. So if you had a level with that, that is what Nintendo considered a glitch. But how would I know that's a glitch when I just thought that was, like, a cool move, a cool tech move for me to do, you know? Yeah. So how would I know that it's a glitch? So I very well could have had glitches, but I don't know that.
That half, like, a lot of the community, I feel, especially the hardcore community, looks at things like this.
Exactly.
This is a technique. This is something cool that can be done by a higher level player, and maybe isn't intended for like an entire audience, but it's still like something that's in the game and therefore is fair play.
But that's where, I feel like Nintendo's motivation is, of course, hey, we want this game to be playable by everyone. You're creating a level that can cause frustration because a normal human being can't beat it, right?
Yeah.
Because they know the rules of Mario, but they don't know the special rules of Mario. But
that's fair.
That's where I feel like categories would help so much.
No, categories would, and it's also the fact of like, hey, you know, you made this thing that people can make whatever they want in it, and you know what, there's also a bunch of garbage levels that were just poorly made because they're not designers. You're not deleting those levels just because they played by your rules, you know what I mean? Like I can see the frustration in that other side of the coin as well.
A well-made level, even the level I gave you, actually it has a glitch right in the middle of the level. I don't know if you saw, but where the bomb, you shoot the bomb with a fireball and then the bomb goes through the bullet bill launcher and it goes and it shoots up to the top. I'll probably, once that level goes up, I'll probably get all my levels removed again once that level goes up simply because of that. Right now it's waiting for you to beat it before it's ever going to go up.
But there's
a strong chance that that's going to get all my levels deleted again. It's so simple. It's such a little thing. It's not my fault that I discovered it. I think it's cool. I don't want to take it out because it's cool. Like, you know, it's not my, that's not my fault I don't like being punished for your code or me unintentionally using your code.
But maybe you weren't, right? Like, we don't know whether it was a mistake.
I don't know.
But maybe, you know, I can see companies sometimes taking steps like that. If you're, like, vocally against Nintendo outside of the application, you know, or vocally against the developer, some developers take that very personally and will, like, boot you from the game or will ban you from the service and stuff. Like, it's really tough to tell without them telling
you. It's strange. They didn't tell me. And it was just my levels got deleted, my medals got removed, but I could still play the game. I could still upload new levels. I didn't get flagged for anything. My account wasn't in any bad standing. It was just a very much like, we're erasing your history from this game.
And I think that's the other part of this. We're kind of dancing around it, but it is the lack of communication, right? Clear what the rules are in this house for something like this to happen. And in Nintendo's, for example, one of the things you'll see that was constantly quoted in the Mario Maker community was if something was considered inappropriate, it would be taken down. But what is the definition of inappropriate by Nintendo standards? Like, that wasn't really made clear. And so this has been a struggle somewhat. Now, to their credit, they have sort of called you back and tried to hear out everything that you've had, like the entire experience.
The Nintendo of America customer service was incredible. They were awesome. They didn't have an answer, and I think that more kind of speaks to the Nintendo, like Nintendo of America, being kind of just a mouthpiece. You know, Nintendo Japan.
Japan makes decisions, and America kind of has to follow suit,
exactly.
Or at least communicate back what's going on this side.
And if they didn't have like a moderation rule system in the game, then, you know, like, you couldn't even call out PR at Nintendo in Japan and they wouldn't know, right? Somebody on the community moderation front did something.
Yeah, somebody somewhere in the world hit a button, all of
maybe
your work
fell
disappeared.
On it.
Possibly. Like,
yeah,
totally possible. No, that's totally possible.
You making them play a level that took 60 hours.
Exactly, that's like, totally could have happened. Like, I could have like
flushing this poo.
That's the thing is that it's a total possibility, and I mean, it's hard for me not to, you know, even like question like, was I targeted? I mean, that's a silly thing to think, but your paranoia starts going on. You start trying to make excuses for whatever reason.
Well, then what was the reaction online, if you don't mind me kind of diving into that part? Like, was it just very much, oh, this is happening, or what were people telling you?
Oh, well, like community members or like people, just people on the internet? It was very varied. I mean, I think a lot of people people. I think there's a lot of backlash just by the general population of people who quote unquote play video games for a living. Yeah. I don't think anyone would ever understand the amount of time I put into it. I mean, outside of like the 40, 50 hours a week I'm online, there's also massive amounts of practice for me to stay good. There's, you know, networking. There's coming down to do great talk shows like this. You know, you know, there's tons of stuff that goes into it. There's, you know, keeping track of your equipment, everything else. It's a lot of work. You know what I mean? So I think you're automatically going to face a lot of backlash because people think you're just lazy in general. Yeah. There's a stigma to playing, quote unquote, playing video games. I'm sure you guys just writing about video games have heard it in your life too.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. I mean, exactly. It's easy to think that like you don't do anything, but you just kick your feet up and, you know, because there was that old DeVry commercial where those guys are testing, oh, tighten up the graphics on level 4. And they're like, we get to play video games. It's awesome. And it's like, well, somebody had to make level 4, you know? Like,
the guy was not on camera.
Exactly. He's not there. He's in the back.
So I think it was tough. It was a backlash. It was also probably my first time where I've ever done anything and just people like really like hated me on the internet. And that was a tough thing to deal with. I wasn't ready for that.
Review some games.
I'm actually surprised you had such a backlash because I mean this happened around the same time where there wasn't the most positive perception of Nintendo stuff on the internet. They were claiming videos on YouTube. There was when was this exactly? What month?
March. March 1st, yeah.
So I just know that in general there's been this sort of like kind of weird slow backlash against Nintendo as a company for not being part, you know, sign of the times and all that stuff like that, doing their own thing. So I'm actually surprised that more people didn't come to your defense and be kind of like, hey, this is a very archaic practice. What's going on?
Yeah,
here?
I mean, some people definitely did. And I think the nice comments never sit in your mind. It's always like the comments are like, you need to go in a hole and die. Like, those are the ones that sit in your mind. Yeah. Like, and I think just also being my first experience with that, now I don't care. Like, now be mean to me on the internet.
Yeah, you get thick skin very fast.
Exactly, you do.
Like it or not, that's part of it.
Yeah, totally. But it was a bit jarring, and it was also just it was hard to understand. It was hard to convey my story that like, hey, I'm not whining here. I'm not, you know, being pouty about this. This is my life. This is my job. This is my career. And you know, they're stifling my creativity in some ways, my entrepreneurship. They're stifling me being able to take care of my family in some ways. Granted, it probably ended up all working out better for me in the long run because I did get, you know, Kotaku did the article on me and I've got press and now I probably wouldn't be here if it wasn't for that. But
that's how we met.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But
maybe
I mean,
you erased the levels yourself.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? There was a whole Reddit thread about that.
What?
That maybe
I made that up. That's not real.
No, like there was a whole Reddit thread that maybe. Maybe I did it just to get, which I thought that was the best one, you know.
Well, mission accomplished, dude.
I know. Hey, it's worked out for me. Obviously, I knew what was going to happen, you know.
So you were at, was last year your first Awesome Game or Games Done Quick?
Yeah, this past January is my first Awesome Games Done Quick. So I was very, very lucky to get in.
This past January, in fact, so I was raving on this show at least about. My favorite event was the blind Mario, Super Mario Maker race, where levels were made and two teams had to go at it, see who finished the first. I had no idea, because I didn't know you then, that you were on there in the following event, which was the hard Mario Maker race.
The hard Mario Maker race, the Kaizo level.
This year, you are going to run the blind race.
Yes, they didn't accept our hard Maker race this year, so I had to regulate myself to the easy levels, I guess.
I'm just saying, what?
No, I'm really excited. I'm super happy. I love doing these events. This will be my fourth marathon this year. Actually, I love doing these events. It's great. You raise a ton of money for charity, which is awesome. You get to, you know, hang out with tons of other nerds just like you who also are obsessive compulsive about playing video games very fast. You learn
and
a ton.
Talented at that, right?
Talented, super talented. It's a really cool, awesome event. If anybody ever gets a chance to go to like a speedrunning event or a GDQ, like go. Because it's really, really fun. It's 7 days.
Seeing live?
24 hours a day, 7 days of just of stuff going on. There's like at any given time outside of just the main runs going on, there's side events and side races and, you know, just gambling on video games,
which I love, because like as we're all watching and documenting, covering here at IGN, the sort of the rise of esports, mm-hmm. I'm sitting there being like, well, this is fascinating to me, but it's somebody who's not super connected to the fighting game community, mm-hmm. or doesn't understand Dota. Like, I see stuff like this, and I'm like, that's my style.
Yeah.
Like, that's it for me right there. Yeah. I love that kind of stuff.
See, I'm the same way. I totally am not into esports, but I'm obsessed with speedrunning, and I could watch... I mean, I don't like every game. I don't like watching every game, but there's certain games where I will sit down and watch that speedrun, no matter who's doing it, because it's just so cool. And I think the other cool thing about speedrunning is you're never going to see a game broken more than that. You're never going to see someone... You know, Half-Life 2, which is a very popular game. Like, in the speedrun, they just fly everywhere. They basically just bounce on a block and just fly all around the map. And
manipulating
physics. And it's so cool to see, because they don't do anything that's intended. And it's really fun. Yeah,
I mean, I always stop, like, and no matter what I'm doing, I stop and watch Super Mario 64 speedruns, because they're just
the
like,
race. Yeah, the Mario 64 race, which is becoming a staple in GDQ, which I love. Yeah.
It's a combination between, like, The Matrix and Jackie Chan and just breaking through walls and showing up. Every time I watch, I remember like spending, I think
there's not a star right there. I know.
And I'm like, how did you do that? But like, I remember like playing the clock tower level, and just it taking me 3.5 hours to get to the top. And then he falls. He's like, wah! He's out all the way over. And I watch someone play it now, and they're just like quadruple jumping up to the top in half a second. I'm like, this is so damn cool.
Yeah, they get all 120 stars in like an hour and a half.
It's awesome. It's awesome.
It's insane. I mean, counting the cutscenes just coming in and out. It's really cool.
So if you're listening interested in Summer Games Done Quick, this is actually happening this year at the Hilton Minneapolis downtown. I think they're still taking registration, but this is happening from July 3rd to July 10th, 2016, obviously. The charity this year is Doctors Without Borders. That's also a big deal. You should check this out if you have not. We've talked about it on the show before, and it is good. It is damn good.
It's fun.
You need to check that out. All right, so then we're going to move forward a little bit to talk a little bit about Nintendo at E3. More specifically, that this morning, something that we pretty much said was going to happen on this show happened. And that was that Nintendo came out and said, hey, we actually are going to have a few other games on our live programming. So if you remember back, what was it? It's been like a month now.
Yeah.
We kicked off what we called the E3 nightmare. And in that, Nintendo basically came forward and said, hey, Zelda's going to be the only playable game on the show floor. Now, that has not changed. We got to make that clear for folks at home. What was added to that today was that when the Treehouse Live kicks off at 9 a.m., it's going to kick off with Pokemon Sun and Moon, which today, as of this show recorded, there was some new information about that game delivered, which was really, really cool. And then on the 15th, which is Wednesday, starting at 10 a.m., you're going to have a special Pokemon Go developer Q&A. Then Treehouse Live is going to basically stream through upcoming games that are coming out this summer. So you're going to see Monster Hunter Generations, Dragon Quest VII, Fragments of the Forgotten Past, Tokyo Mirage Sessions. Nothing new here. Like, these were all games that were already on the books, but they need promotion space. And why would you be at E3 if not to promote them?
Yeah, I mean, they're leveraging their E3 stream to do kind of a mini direct, right? Like, about games that are coming out. So, I mean, it's good to hear that it's not just Zelda the entire time. You remember I said I'd be worried about them just giving away too much or stretching it if they do the same demo over and over and over on this program.
Yeah.
It's cool that they've got especially Pokemon there. Still weird to me that they didn't dedicate a portion of their booth to Pokemon, because it's
20th anniversary
also,
only happens once.
It's about proclaiming that franchise. Pokemon matters to the core of Nintendo. Yes, there's Pokemon Go on mobile phones, which they wouldn't have been able to demo inside that hall, by the way, because you can't get a signal.
Yeah.
But like, to not have this big game there is still kind of strange. So I'm glad to hear that they have it at least on the
But it's
show.
Also weird to see Pokemon Go there, and that it is a mobile experiment that isn't really counted among Nintendo's mobile games that are coming out, right? Like the Fire Emblem and the Animal Crossing thing that we're getting later this year. And they're going to dedicate part of E3 towards it. When, like, even last year, talking to, you know, Reggie about, like, do you show mobile at E3? And he goes, this isn't the audience for that.
Because, like, Pokemon's always been sort of like Nintendo's, like, Wolverine, where, like, he's not really part of the team, but he shows up a lot and then leaves. And whenever he wants, he comes back. And then he's not there for a while and comes
back.
Never
thought of it that way.
Yeah, it's just, like, it's just not directly connected to everything they do. But when he's there, you're like, oh, that's an X-Man.
I was thinking, is this like a Marvel Sony situation where, all right, you can have Pokemon on the show, but then you also have to have Pokemon Go, like, the new Spider-Man.
Yeah.
But no, obviously, look, Nintendo is very much in charge of Pokemon still, but I think it is a Nintendo franchise. Obviously, the characters appear in other games, are very core to Nintendo. They're not on a PlayStation and an Xbox, right? Mm-hmm. But like Pokemon Go is definitely this kind of, are we comfortable with it kind of game experience where it branches out to a new platform? And so I think they're embracing that, are saying, you know, here are the two games. Don't forget about either one of them. And if you're going to play the one on mobile, remember there's the one on the DS.
Yeah, and that's not to say that this live stream isn't going to have, and I think we've said this before too, just intermissions where you're going to hear, hey, remember Bayonetta, Cloud, and Corrin? Those amiibo are happening with these dates. Or, hey, we have a dedicated set of this. Or, hey, here's this smaller, you know, Detective Pikachu game that wasn't announced for the West yet. Surprise, here it is.
But they're not
talked about, though, that they brought the bar so low that anything is kind of like a meal.
It's going to be new Mario Maker literally games. Sure they're going to give us a Mario Maker update at E3. Yeah, actually, I'm like one that's like, all right, and it's available right now. You know, one of those things. Like, it's available right
Mario
now.
Man,
four swords.
Smash Brothers. Last year was the thing where you had Ryu and you had Lucas. Mm-hmm. We're basically, or was it Lucas or it was Roy? I can't remember. I think it was Ryu, Roy, and Lucas. But we're available that day.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah. I mean, the core point. So Mario Maker, I'm totally expecting something too, and like a little Splatoon thing and all that. There's not going to be an X, though. Like, for people who are thinking, oh, they're giving us a little bit more, I think this was planned for the show all along, and the NX is not going to be part of it. And, like, E3 originally was going to be a hardware show. It's still a hardware show, because now we're going to see hardware from Sony and from Microsoft, and obviously Oculus being present as well. So it's still a hardware show, but NX is not there.
I feel like the NX has been talked about more than any other console that nobody knows literally anything about it. And I personally talk about it on stream probably every day because somebody always asks about it.
We had talked about the PS4 and the next Xbox One for like a full year and a half before they were even officially confirmed. The NX has been officially confirmed. They've said, this is what we're doing.
Codename.
It's at least a codename for now. Everything else has been hypothetical. But yeah, it is very interesting that all of a sudden we have this sort of like repeat of the big hardware battle from, what was it, E3 2013?
Yeah.
Where the two big console guys went back to back, and Nintendo's not part of that conversation. But, you know, they'll show up when they're ready.
But I agree with Per that this was part of the plan all along.
Yeah.
So I was really surprised on the internet this morning just seeing people kind of having this thank God or like finally a meal, and I'm just like, well, this isn't anything new. This isn't a commitment that you're getting some unannounced game yet. Like, I'm not convinced that they're going to go that far.
Yeah, but you know, Nintendo fans, it's that whole, like, you know, Dumb and Dumber, so you're saying there's a chance thing. You know,
yeah,
it's like,
Nintendo's like Magneto to Nintendo fans. Like, we want them to be good. We don't want them to die, but, like, you know, like, we want.
This helmet,
exactly,
you can't get through to them.
That's exactly it. They have this helmet on. We can't mentally,
that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, but I do think this means some DLC announcements. Come on.
Yeah.
Definitely Mario Maker, Splatoon are going to be talked about. And then, you know, we have released the 512th map for Fire Emblem or something. We'll be part of that stream.
See, I was thinking if this didn't happen or if this didn't get announced this way where they said, okay, June 15th, we're going to have these games. What was kicking off in the back of my mind was, okay, there must be a Direct next week.
Right.
And there isn't. Yeah. Like, at least from what I can tell or from what we know so far, unless they go again with that plan of, okay, we're going to start with something on Sunday, then Monday we go quiet because nobody's doing anything Monday, and then Tuesday, bam, here's our...
I think you're going to get a lot of like little sort of subtle news trickles coming out of the Treehouse Live thing. That's the way it always is. Like, two people will be having a conversation, and they'll be like, yeah, and it supports VR. And you're like, wait, what? And then just keep playing. I don't think they'll say that specifically, but we'll see.
There'll be other hardware. Like, you know, Pokemon Sun and Moon's getting its own dedicated new 3DS. I mean, why wouldn't it? Like, why wouldn't you do that, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, I think you're right, though, having part of the booth for a big 20th anniversary, big deal. Like, that, and also skipping Zelda's 30th. Like, I was hoping that at E3 that was going to really get played up, and it's not. Metroid's 30th, not so far. Also,
well, they don't want to say Metroid.
Yeah, I don't.
They just don't want to say Metroid, because then people will go like, oh, yeah.
Right.
Federation Force.
That'll just make us all upset if we talk about Metroid.
Yeah, that's
Zelda's 30. I'm a little wary about Nintendo's E3. I just think either Zelda is all they have or Zelda's that good. You know, it's one of those two things.
I think it's both.
I, it,
I think it's both. I think it is that this is what we have to show right now, but also it's that good because we're dedicating the entire space to it.
I'm not the one to sort of sit here and pretend and beg and hope that there's going to be so much more than there actually will be, but I really do want them to spin out the 30th anniversary Zelda stuff. Like, it's doing something that sort of, if it all connects back to Zelda for Wii U, even that's if it's going to miss that time period.
And NX.
Yeah. I think that'd be really cool. Like, they just even as simple as like, I love that retro Mario amiibo. Like, doing something like that with Link would be really cool. More books, like holding more Hyrule Historia type stuff. That's awesome. That's a great idea.
Yeah. Say that one more time.
Holding the Triforce. Oh, yeah. Link holding the Triforce. 8-bit Link holding the Triforce.
That'd be so cool. That'd be so good. Yeah. There's just, I mean, there's a lot there to do. So I hope they find a way to celebrate that in some way. Because I really like when they get all in on a birthday, I really like what they do with things. I remember like the classic NES series. You guys remember that on the GBA?
Yep.
It was very cool, that just the way they did the packaging. Mm-hmm. They put out that GBA SP that looked like an NES. Mm-hmm. All of that was great.
I love the same version of all that stuff in Japan, because if it was a Famicom Disk System game, it got Famicom Disk System packaging.
Right.
I was like, who thinks of that? Like, it's such a small detail. But
yeah, it was cute.
I guess regardless of how we feel about Nintendo and E3 going into the show, we are very much open to and probably even expecting just a few things that are surprises. Mm-hmm. But again, if you're waiting for an X, that ship has sailed.
Hold your breath.
Yeah, I always say in situations like this that if you expect nothing at all and you get anything above it, then that's already
a
victory.
Win. Yeah, that's a win.
There you go.
I expect a lot from Zelda, though. Like, after all this wait, I want to see a world that is alive, right? Like, we talked about the little glimpses we've gotten and the demo we've seen. Mm-hmm. And now I want to see alive in that world.
And I want to know what the new hook is, you know? Like, what's the new thing that defines this game?
We'll get the name. Grass cutting. We'll get a lot of jumping off horses.
Long arrows. I'm down with that.
Multiple fishing rods.
Yeah, I just want to see more of that sort of like
dual-handled fishing.
Yeah.
I want to see more of those like sort of emergent gameplay moments that we saw with the original teaser, which is just Link coming through this field, and all of a sudden this giant monster pops out and it turns into a boss battle.
Well, and that's something I hope they tap into too, just sort of that Shadow of Colossus, of the Colossus style. Like, you just stumbled into something that you're like, holy cow, how do I deal with this? And you, in the moment, have to figure it out. I'm replaying that game right now, so it just set off in my head.
Shadow of the Colossus?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, are you playing the HD version?
I am. Yeah, sweet. I rented it on PS Now. And
I love that game.
Mostly because what they showed at Game Awards kind of reminded me, what they showed of Zelda at the Game Awards a year ago or whatever, just reminded me of that too. So it's like just doing some push-ups.
As you know, I'm still playing The Witcher 3.
Like, and that's
I finished Uncharted, went back to The Witcher 3. I just think it's fantastic. And, Aonuma is rumored...
Hopefully he's played that game.
He has played that game before, because that game to me like instantly reminded me of that moment where that big monster comes out.
Yep.
You'll walk around the landscape, you find lots of drowners and wolves and stuff, but once in a while you walk into a section, there'll be like a big, like a dragon or griffin or fork tail or something coming out. And like those moments, I think, are just really so like they define the Witcher experience. So if they can pull that off in Zelda, that would be so
awesome. That would be cool. Yeah. All right, cool. Well, I guess that's our show for today. David, thank you so much for coming in.
Hey, my pleasure, man.
So how can folks find you on the internet? Plug everything.
All right. You can catch me at twitch.tv, grand_poobear, P-O-O. You can get me at Twitter, at grandpoobear. You can check me out at this Tuesday, racing Arthur Blues in a Super Mario World at twitch.tv, Super Mario SMW Community. .com. Yeah, you can check me this Tuesday racing. I've never speedrun Mario World, so I'm hoping to pull out a massive upset here.
Are you going to practice?
I play Kaizo, so I should be pretty good. But speedrunning Mario World's all about the cape. I never use the cape.
Which is how you beat Panga's level. Cape escape was you figuring out.
But that's
out
about
really
floating. This is about flying.
that's one of the only games I've ever like speedrun, and not even close to what the community can do. But
I think
gotten
the record's
it
like 10 minutes.
Yeah, I've gotten it to like 10 minutes and 30 seconds,
which is pretty good. I was about to say you're not too far off on there.
Really?
On 11 exit, you use a Star World. Yeah, 11 exit.
Bowser's back door, as they call
pretty
it.
Pretty good, man.
Weird name.
I would submit my time to speedrun.com. That's what
really?
I
really. I'm gonna get crushed.
You should. You're not in last. I'll tell you that. You're not in last. You're not in last.
No, that's fair.
Yeah. So I think, yeah, that's all the spots you can find me right now. Yeah. And then at SGDQ on July 9th is our Mario Maker blind race.
Sweet. Awesome.
Okay, nice.
And then check out makersofmario.com. This Monday it's launching. So.
Oh, nice. Okay. Congratulations.
Yep. Sweet. Before it's gone this Tuesday.
Before it's gone this Tuesday after Nintendo hears this and gives it a cease and desist.
CND. All right. Well, thank you very much for listening to Nintendo Voice Chat. You should email us feedback, nvc@ign.com. You should head on over to iTunes. I had an actual review and I didn't paste it in, so I'm just going to quickly pull it up.
It's not this one?
No, that's from a week ago, but good catch. One second.
Five out of five. Jose is the best.
Yeah. Actually, I did get name dropped.
The thing
that,
the most is this Jose.
I did not write it.
He's so very, very tall.
We're not writing these. All right, so this comes from John from Maine, 1991, on iTunes. He says, I'm a delivery driver in northeastern Maine, and my long drives are filled with podcasts. This is one of my personal favorites, this show. I like how Brian, Jose, and Pierre have different views and are not afraid to disagree. And I love having all my Nintendo news in one podcast each week. I don't disagree. It's okay, John from Maine. And yeah, he just appreciates that we keep the show moving and that we do our job as well. Thank you very much, John. We appreciate that.
Thank you.
So if you write a review, we can end up reading it on the show. Just head on over to iTunes. Lastly, you can find us all on Twitter. You can find David one more time
at Graham Pooh Bear.
You can find Brian Altano at
Agent Bizzle.
You can find Pear Schneider
at Pear IGN.
And you can find myself, Jose_Otero, on Twitter. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll be back next week with more Nintendo Voice Chat.
Stranger, I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.